the shoes. The story is told about the Slonim Rebbe. I don't remember if it was about the Nesiva Shalom himself or that he told it about his father-in-law, the Beis Avram. But whatever the case is, the Slonim Rebbe noticed that he had a Talmud who was eating a little bit too gluttonously. He was a little bit too enthusiastic about his food. Not in the way that Ben Torah should be eating. He dove in, b'kol ramach hevav v'shasa gidav, and ate with the b'chol levavoy, b'chol nafsho, b'chol ma'odoy. And the Slonim Rebbe wanted to tell him off, but listen to the beautiful musar of a mechanech. He told him as follows. He came from a dynasty of great rebbes. So he told him, the way you eat your food reminds me of what my grandfather looked like when he ate the matzah. That was the musar. Got the message across, but in such a fine, elevating kind of way. Now let's take that a step further, lest you say, okay, maybe that's how Chassidus Rebbes ate the matzah. But Rav Shlomo Brevda said that he used to go to Rav Chatzka Levenstein regularly. And he reported how on a regular Shabbos, Rav Chatzka Levenstein, the way he ate his challah was, he would crumble it, he would crumble the shear, and then he would put like little fingerfuls of crumbs into his mouth until he ate the shear, and that was basically it. He ate very sparsely. But he said that on Pesach, the whole thing looked very different. He said he ate quantities of matzah, and with an appetite, with gusto. And Rav Shlomo Brevda was close enough that he actually allowed himself to ask the Rebbe, to ask Rav Chatzka Levenstein, my height. And Rav Chatzka told him, we're eating matzah, we're eating Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're eating emuna. So let's appreciate that. Let's appreciate the experience of eating matzah without deep pshatim. Without deep pshatim. We'll just call it the oimek hapshat. The oimek hapshat of the experience of eating matzah. Of course, the significance of the matzah goes on and on and on, and there are many layers of depth. But the most straightforward pshat is that the matzah is the experience of the geula. That al shem shalahistik b'tzeikom lahachmit ad shenigla aleim melech malchei hamlochim. So let's appreciate that the experience of the matzah itself. So let's take a step back. Let's take a step back and appreciate the general setting of that night when they ate the matzah. We'll rewind a little bit and go back to when Moshe first approaches Paray. Moshe first approaches Paray and says, Elokei Ivrim Shlochani Elecha Lemor, Shalach Et Ami V'Avduni. Comes to Paray with a piece of news. The Ivrim, that slave race, that low-down, pathetic, oppressed, subhuman race, they have an Elokim. They have a God. And he's ordering you to send them out. How does Paray take that? You think about it from his perspective. The Hebrews have a God. Could be. Every nation has a God. Many have multiple gods. Canaan has a God. Amun has a God. Moab has a God. And the way it works is, my God is stronger than your God. My God can beat up your God. It's all about, you have to know how to manipulate the gods and everything. But say they're coming and telling me that they also have a God. No. I'm standing at the top of the most powerful and successful battery of gods and sorcerers that exists. I can contend with anybody. Amon can't contend with me. Canaan can't contend with me. Moab can't contend with me. We're Mitzrayim, and I'm Paray. So you're telling me they have a God? And he responds with the words, Mi Hashem, who is he? And Hashem, basically, his answer is, very good, I'm glad you asked that question. I'm glad you asked that question. Because that's exactly the question I want to answer. Mi Hashem, that's all. And now, I'm going to give you the answer in installments. And this is where it all begins. And Hashem is basically telling Paray, you asked the question, but revealing me din shlichus. I'm going to give the answer on your back, but I'm really directing that answer at my people. That was really the whole idea of the process. They thought that they were abandoned, hopeless, just at the bottom of the Egyptian caste system, and they're going to be a slave race forever, which is the expectation for any slave race. But I want them to realize that they have a father, that they have an Elikim, and this is about me introducing myself to them. That they should appreciate who I am and my love for them. Those are the key 2 points. Let's just stress that. Well, not in parentheses, but those are the key 2 points of the whole process. Hashem wanted to show us, number one, who he is, and number two, that we are his people, his love for us. That's what it all boils down to. So, Hashem begins a process of blow by blow, literally, showing Paroi, but more importantly, showing us, Mi Hashem, that's all, Mi Hashem. Dam, Tzfadea, Kinim, Oiv, and blow by blow, Hashem is tearing apart all of nature, and blow by blow, Hashem is taking the most powerful nation in the world and tearing it down step by step. Tearing it down step by step. We have to appreciate this. But Victor Miller pointed out that he said the devastation in Mitzrayim was so terrible that Mitzrayim is in the backyard of Eretz Yisrael. It takes 400 years until you start hearing about Mitzrayim again in Tanakh. Right? Bnei Yisrael come into Eretz Yisrael, Mitzrayim's in the backyard. A little bit of time goes by. This starts with Canaan and this starts with Moab and this starts with Ammon and this starts with the Plishtim. Mitzrayim, we don't hear anything about them. We start hearing about them in the days of Shlaima, and they start making trouble again in the days of Rechavim. 400 years go by. That's how badly Mitzrayim was decimated at that. But the point is that Mitzrayim and the world, and most importantly us, were being introduced to a new concept that nobody believed in, nobody knew existed. Elokeo Elohim. There's all kinds of forces out there. Again, they believed in all kinds of Elohimim. But each one has its power, and each one has its limitations, and each one has its faults. But now the world is seeing, blow after blow, the concept of an Elokeo Elohim. And they're all watching open mouthed. And this is our Father. This is our Father. When we get to through the ninth Makkah, once we're finished, we're through Makkah's Choshech, Paro is still holding out. Paro is still holding out. And basically, Hashem comes and tells Moshe, up till now I was playing games. Kind of like Kiviyochol, so to speak. Hashem is throwing darts from a distance. It's through Moshe. Each Makkah takes a week. Paro digs in. And basically, Hashem tells Moshe, this was a game. He's allowed to be Mitzrayim. It's like Hashem is sitting with Paro at the negotiating table, so to speak. And gives Paro a slam. Paro is flat on the ground. Hashem picks him up by the ears, put him back at the negotiating table and says, okay, now will you let them go? No! Boom! Back on the ground. Picks him back up, puts him back at the table and says, now will you let them go? You're the boss! And this is going on. It's about 10 months. This is going on. And finally Hashem tells Moshe, this was all a game. Now, you move out of the way. And Hashem says hair-raising words. Ani yotze b'soich Mitzrayim. Up till now we knew that the Shechina Mitzrayim were incompatible. But Hashem says, now I'm breaking all the rules. All of nature was already torn apart. But now, all the rules are being torn apart. Ani yotze b'soich Mitzrayim. These are hair-raising words. And he says, and when that happens, it's a split second. It's a split second and you're out. But, Hashem says, to Bnei Yisrael, you were sitting and watching. You're watching me tear apart your oppressors. But you were sitting back passively. But now at this point, you were meant to be learning up what's going on. As Rabbi Victor Miller put it was, the process of the Makkahs, we can call it Mesechta Hashem. And each Makkah was a perek. And there was a 3-week break between each Makkah. The purpose of the 3-week break, Rabbi Victor Miller said, was Chazoras Hashir. It might sound, it's a funny way of saying it, but it's actually the pshat. The Bnei Yisrael were meant to be studying and internalizing and learning up what they were seeing in order to develop an understanding of Hashem that would put them into position to become the Am Hashem. And finally, Hashem says, okay, before we take it to the final step, before Makas Bechayrus, there is a great test, the great exam. Who actually completed the course of Yediyas Hashem properly? And the instructions that the Bnei Yisrael were given on that night was, if you will, the final exam. The final exam. He says, up till now you were watching my power. You got to see my power. I have a number of expectations from you now. First of all, I want you to shech the Karbon Pesach. Shech the Karbon Pesach, we all understand what the test there was. Hashem is saying, after you've seen, have you really seen my power and my might? Are you willing to step out? And stick out your neck. Totally put yourself in my hands. Put all your eggs in my basket. Mamish, make yourself vulnerable. They're all going to want to kill you now. And you know how dangerous they are. But are you ready to do it knowing who I am? Goes further. Part of it is what we might call the deeper Nisayan of the Karbon Pesach. And this really deserves its own length. Was, are you capable of slaughtering your own Shaychus to the culture of Mitzrayim? No Mitzri could slaughter a lamb. How could you do such a thing? There's nothing more despicable, nothing more great and moral and beautiful than a lamb, and nothing more despicable and low down in Mitzri culture than slaughtering a lamb. Hashem says, are you ready to totally break ties with this and move into my value system? Okay, that also is not our discussion. But there's another expectation. There's another expectation. This is really where we want to go now. And that is, Hashem says, I want you to sit down, belachat, realizing that you might not have time to finish your meal. You're going to be whisked out so fast. Whisked out so fast. They've been stuck here for 210 years. And even now that the Makkos has been going on, nothing is moving. Hashem set it up such that it's going to depend on Paroi. And Paroi's not budging. He has very impressive staying power. We know where that staying power came from, right? But Paroi is showing true leadership and true strength in holding it out. I don't know if the Bnei Yisrael knew at that point, I mean before the notification came, that there were only going to be 10 Makkos. Okay, it's a new stage of reality, but Paroi's not moving. And then, like we said before, Hashem says, the game is going to be over now. Moshe moves out of the way, Ani Yotze B'Soich Mitzrayim, and it's over in a split second. But, part of what I'm expecting from you is, after everything you've seen about me, after everything I've shown you, you have to be with full conviction of that. You have to be sitting down B'Chipozon. You have to be sitting down, ready to get up and run. It's like I tell you, go home, And make yourself a cup of coffee, but Mashiach is going to be here before the water boils. So you have to sit there, b'chipazayim, everybody, shoes tied, coats on. I guess they were in coats. It was Chodesh Aviv, that was part of the idea. But everybody ready to just get up and go. And so fast that even the bread you bake is not going to have time to rise. And they sat down, and like the Rashba says in his Perush HaNa'agoda, if it's the Rashba, that all the nisim have to be preceded by emunah. Meaning, it was the emunah in Hashem's yecholet, it was the emunah in Hashem's power that fueled the nes, and that gave them this chus that Hashem would actually go ahead and do that. That Hashem would actually go ahead and do it. And therefore, we have to work it out. They got the tzivoy, this was discussed in the Shvah, we don't have to get into this now, but they got the tzivoy to make matzahs already the night before. It was in the morning, that lehistik tzikam lahachmis. So whatever the case is, things happened so fast that, yeah, they wanted to make themselves rolls to take along, and the dough didn't manage to rise. Things happened so fast that they had to just run out with the hard, coarse matzahs, and that was what they had to eat. And here was where they really experienced the otzma, the power of Hashem in action, was how totally stuck, nothing moving for 200 years, and then, in a split second, they were whisked out. And they tasted that otzma in the matzah. And the fact that they didn't have their fluffy rolls was the experience of Hashem's action. And they tasted Hashem's absolute control, His absolute shlita, His absolute power. That's what they tasted in the matzah. That's what they were eating in those matzahs. In fact, the Shlah takes this a beautiful step further. You know, there's a certain tension. I think that we grew up with the understanding that first and foremost, matzahs was what they ate as slaves. And now we know that from the Rishonim. But that's a chiddush. That's a chiddush. And in fact, not everybody agrees with it, bichlal. What we see straightforward in the Torah and in Chazal is that the matzah was the bread of the Geul. But we know, the Ramban brings it up, the Maharal totally rejects the whole concept. The Rashba also does. Again, that perush is either the Rashba or B'Yosef Gektilia. So it's either one Soroth Elyon or a different Soroth Elyon. Whatever the case is, also rejects the premise. It's a machloikis. But whatever the case is, we have very great Kadmonim telling us that no, this was the matzah that they ate as slaves, and that's the pshat in Holach Ma'anya. The Shlah puts the two together in an amazing way, and he says, this brings out the point that we're making. He says, this was the bread that they ate as slaves. That coarse bread, they didn't let it rise, like the Ramban tells us. They didn't let it rise. And they didn't give them time to make the bread properly. And therefore, the natural mahalach would have been that after they would be taken out of Mitzrayim, we're familiar with the concept of a deep trauma, of a terrible negative association. The Yotzei Mitzrayim would never be able to look at a matzah again. It would bring them right back to all of their terrible suffering. Just based on, we've seen things like this. A person would see a matzah, he would vomit. But the Shlach says that part of what Hashem did is that he came and said, I'm going to take what was the experience of your inui And that itself is going to turn for you into the experience of the Geula. That itself, the matzah that was so strongly associated with all your suffering for all those years, when I whisked you out like that and the dough didn't have a chance to rise, after that, when you ate matzah, you were brought right back to that, to how Hashem whisked us out, that totally supplanted, totally replaced the experience of the inui. That was part of the koyach of Hashem. But what's the point? The point here again is that it was the matzah was what brought out the expectation of the Bnei Yisrael to be ready for that experience, to have that conviction in Hashem's Yeshua, and then they were able to experience and afterwards actually taste it, experience that power, that might, when they ate the matzah. And Bereshus, I think it's pashut that we can allow ourselves to say, to just know how relevant this is to our current reality. These last few years, pashut to anybody who's attuned, that Hashem is moving His world through a process. The idea of Olam Kimenhag Noyeg, of the world's natural course, is becoming more and more a thing of the past. You could say, since when? I think since Corona. Started seeing that the world that we felt comfortably in control of, and the world with its predictable patterns, and of course we knew Hashem's in charge, but Lamaisa, we had a good handle on the world. Everything started coming apart. And anybody attuned should be experiencing Hashem saying, this world belongs to me, and I am reclaiming my world. And now it's up to you to figure out if you want to kick and scream, or if you want to move with me through this process and move on to that higher plane of enlightenment. Grow comfortable in a world that I control, not you. Are you capable of living comfortably in such a world? Even more than that, are you capable of embracing such a world? Are you capable of embracing a world that we're losing the reins? We're losing the control on it, and this is a world that Hashem is reclaiming. Do we want to be a part of that world? Hashem is moving the world up, moving it closer to Him. And it's up to each person to decide whether they want to be on that bandwagon, or if you want to hold on, hope against hope, to that layer of Derech HaTeva that's getting so thin they almost can't see it anymore. But if you look hard and you really do have a deep emunah in Derech HaTeva, you could still somehow see it. Particularly with the events of this last year and a half, where we've been seeing such a mixture of Hester Panim and He'oras Panim, all coming together, which Rabbi Zichar says is the Yesod of the Charoises. The Charoises is bringing out the Zecher Letapuach, the Nisim that they saw in terms of childbirth, etc., while all the Tzaras are going on. But whatever the case is, the common denominator of the Hester and the He'ora, they're both really bringing home the same message. The world doesn't work according to the rules that you're used to. And Bisrat in Eretz Yisrael, Bisrat with the Bnei Yisrael. The world now is going to work according to my rules. And again, it's up to you to decide, do you want to be a part of that process? Do you want to be a part of that process? Any of the more will follow the reports of the natural cause and effect, of the Derech HaTeva reports, the investigations of what went wrong where, etc., etc., the more we will be hanging on for dear life to that thin veneer of Derech HaTeva, which at this point is stretched so thin, like we said before, you have to be a real, real mammon in it to still see it. But similar to Mitzrayim, where Hashem moved us through things, in order to get us used to the idea that yes, it's like Reb Shlomo Volber said, I think it's his yahrzeit now. Reb Shlomo Volber said that he once went to Reb Chatzka Levenstein to consult in various areas of chinuch and avoda. And after they had their whole discussion, he's getting up to leave. Reb Chatzka said to him, Reb Shlomo, do your talmidim know that there's a Rebbein Shalom? And yeah. So he said, go tell your talmidim that there's a Rebbein Shalom. And that's basically the message now. We know there's a Rebbein Shalom. What do you mean? How do we know? But you know what? We've been seeing now that there really is. And after we saw that there really is, we saw that there actually really is. And then we saw that there really is. And as we're seeing these things going on, and we grew used to the idea that if there's a rain of missiles on Eretz Yisrael, ballistic or otherwise, the danger of that is that people might trip on their way to the Mamad. That's what's dangerous about ballistic missiles. It makes no sense. The whole thing is so uncanny. We have an Iron Dome, and we have Kela David, and all kinds of things. We have an Iron Dome. Let's experience the Iron Dome right. Iron Dome, it's like figuratively saying that there's like this dome over Eretz Yisrael just blocking the missiles. But we say that, Yoshim B'Tzei Sa'eli, and we describe that Iron Dome. You picture Hashem as Kiviyachol, covering over you with His Kiviyachol, with His limb. That's the Lashon of the Pasuk. As though you picture Kiviyachol, Hashem spreading His wings over Eretz Yisrael like this, and that's what the missiles are hitting. And that's why in Eretz Yisrael we're all used to the idea that there can be rains of missiles, but missiles aren't dangerous things. Missiles don't really hurt people. Hashem is moving us further in this Hakara, in knowing Him, but the challenge on us is similar to the challenge in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim they were told, okay, you saw me operating in the nine Makas, you saw my power. Now are you capable of taking that next leap to understanding that I can whisk you out of here in a second? Don't just take each thing in as I send it and say, oh, I see that. After you've gotten enough of Hakara, the question is, can you take the next leap on your own? And say, if I see who Hashem is, then yes, I have that conviction. And I'm going to sit down at supper tonight, not knowing if I'll have time to bench, because Hashem might whisk us out of here so fast. And now too, Hashem is moving us through a process of enhancing our Emunah. And the question is, are we capable of moving ahead proactively with it, taking it and running a bit further, and being mechazik our emunah in that we can see the whole next level of Yeshua's Hashem, of Pilei Hashem, and the realization that that emunah is actually what fuels it. The more we're living that emunah, the more we have the tzus to see it. The more, so to speak, we can't really use the word entitled. That's a very wrong word to ever use. But it gives us that zchus to be able to see more of those nisim. And therefore, Bezos Hashem, we can internalize this and hope and have that emunah that we can see the full Yeshua. We can see the full Yeshua for Kol Achenu Beis Yisrael, that everybody who's B'Tzelo B'Shivya can suddenly get whisked out, and that all of us can be taken now Fela La'ira and Yeshivud L'Ge'ula in one instant, Be'ezos Hashem, in Herbi Amenu, Agutam Moed.